But I actually can't even see the point of people going through a, you know, mission and vision workshop and coming out with language which is so obtuse, so vague, so deliberately, as we were saying before, ambiguous. It's sort of like, oh, well, let's just say something that won't threaten or undermine anyone or challenge anyone. Let's say something that makes everyone feel good, and then we'll all be happy little campers inside the school or inside the company.
And welcome back again to the Modern Learners Podcast. I'm your host, Will Richardson, and this week, Bruce and I dig a little deeper into our latest post at the Modern Learners blog, which talks about the importance of defining our terms in education and the consequences of not doing so. And also, a little bit of a added bonus, we do a little semi-serious 2017 wrap-up as we share our word of the year, our book of the year, our silliest education trend of the year, and then we do a little prognosticating about 2018 and the year to come. As always, thanks so much for listening. Really appreciate it. And if you like what you're hearing, please head over to iTunes and give us a review and tell your friends about us, as we need as many people as we can to join this movement to make schools different places for kids. The conversation starts right after this short announcement about a new offering here at Modern Learners, our Change Leaders community. We hope you join us there, but for now, thanks again so much for listening and sincere best wishes for a happy, healthy, peaceful holiday and a change-filled new year from all of us here at Modern Learners. Enjoy.
Hey everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the Modern Learners podcast. If you're someone who's in a position of educational leadership or who someday aspires to be, and you enjoy diving deep into learning and innovation, we invite you to join us in Modern Learners' newest community, Change Leaders. I'm Lynn Hill, the community manager of CLC, and our space can help ensure you're using your professional learning time to the fullest. CLC offers carefully curated content to help you find signal among the noise, thought-provoking questions and discussions with inspiring community members who are serious about change, live events and access to the Modern Learners team, and a circle of critical friends who will help you kick off change efforts in your schools. Visit changeleaders.community to check out a free 30-day trial and join in our movement. And I look forward to learning with you.
Well, hello, Bruce, here we are again. You know, this is getting to be, I don't know if it's a habit or what, but I think we're going to be doing this like three nights in a row now. I don't know if that's a good idea. That's a little bit too much time for us to be talking.
it's three mornings in a row for me. So, you know, I wake up in the morning, the first thing I think of is Will, and my wife turns to me and goes, really?
Oh, wow. That's kind of scary. Anybody listening to this, that didn't sound very good, but so here we are again. Now, I have to say, I think we made a mistake because we had this really great conversation with Scott Looney yesterday, and I said that was podcast number 32, but I think that's going to come out after the first of the year, and I think we're going to put this one out like right away. So actually, this is going to be podcast number 32, but the good news is that we stumbled a little bit at the beginning of that one, so I think I'm just going to edit the whole thing out and then no one will know. So we're good to go. So we're calling this one 32. The one we did yesterday will be 33. And then we'll figure it out in the new year.
And without previewing too much what's coming up, because we, as you said, doing this in interesting order, I would say to anyone who's either watching us live on Facebook or hears this podcast, do not miss that discussion with Scott Looney.
Absolutely.
It was extraordinary. And you and I both said at the end of it, I'm going to re-listen to that a couple of times because he had an awful lot to say that was just amazing.
To be honest with you, I already did today. I listened to it because the first thing I wanted to pull out was the three reasons why grades are just stupid to begin with, because that was pretty brilliant. But just a lot of really good stuff in there that I'm probably going to steal and use somewhere in my travels with full citations, of course. But no, it was a great, great conversation. And, definitely one that I think should be listened to by a lot of people. And the good news is, I'm just looking at the stats right now, we actually had 1,500 views on that.
Gee, that's good.
Which is really cool. We added something like 60 comments on it. A lot of people sharing it. So
we'd normally say, you know, we're always pumping up people with our numbers and our viewers, and of course in our weekly we have so many huge, but this one's a knockout, and it's not about you and I, it's about Scott Looney and the amazing work he's doing with mastery.org. And I think this is breakthrough stuff. I mean, he's not only talking it, he's walking it, and that's the big deal.
Well, you know, we're going to do a little end of the year wrap up. I'm trying to type this out to Twitter right now, as you know, so we can get more than one person on the stream. But we're going to do our end of the year wrap up anyway. And you know, I have to say, I think that was actually that conversation was one of the highlights, because you know, what's really powerful about it is that, and I said this at the end of the conversation last night too, is that I do think it's one of those things that if they can crack that nut, so to speak, and you know, figure out a different way of doing grades and assessments, I think a whole bunch of other stuff just dominoes after that. Stupid stuff that we do in schools that really doesn't make a lot of sense, that really isn't you know, supported by research, and that really isn't the right thing to do. I think a lot of that stuff just starts falling, because if we can get around the whole numbers thing, I think people go, whoa, so we really can change it up. You know, I think it'd be powerful.
Well, I think debunking the myths, you know, and the poor assumptions we make in schools is a lot of what we've been doing. And the myth around assessment is sort of almost, it's not quite believable that we've hung on to it for so long, that it's poorly based, that it doesn't really do the job it's supposed to be doing. And yet, you know, it dominates what we do in our schools. And I think the thing for me that came out of it with Scott was his clarity. He was just right on point. You know, he just has a really crisp way of conveying the message. And I'm like you. I mean, I'll be listening back to his material and quoting it. And I think that's what people are looking for. They need that clarity to take the message to a larger audience. And I think he gives it to them.
I think, yeah, and he's a great vehicle for that message. Obviously really articulate, very passionate, experienced, smart,
and well positioned, I mean,
all of those things, and well positioned to do it. And I think a lot of their work has been to hone that message, and I think that came across in that podcast. So if you're listening to this podcast before Christmas, wait for that podcast after the new year, and definitely listen to it. And if you are listening now and just can't wait until after the new year, then go to our Facebook page, Modern Learners News, and scroll down a little bit, and you will find it there. You'll find the kind of live Zoom video that is up there to archive it as well. So, yeah, that was a great way to kind of end that series. But tonight, so we're going to spend a little time just talking about the latest Shifting Conversations post, which is something that we've been trying to get in the habit of doing and are getting in the habit of doing, just kind of
becoming more intentional.
Becoming more intentional in the words of one of our favorite people, Missy Emler. And then we're going to do just a little bit of riff on a wrap up of this, I don't even know what to call this year, to be honest with you, but this very interesting year, both in education and in the world. And maybe just talk a little bit about our aspirations for 2018, which I think is going to be a pretty interesting year as well, but hopefully in a more positive light. So Bruce, I wrote that column about you know, common language and the importance of it. And you know, we don't talk about our columns before we write them, so I'm just curious as to what kind of your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, no, I really liked it for a whole lot of reasons. And I think the interesting thing, well, I wake up every morning thinking of you, Will. So you know, whatever.
You have to be nice to me. But anyway.
No, you've been saying this for a long time, pointing to people about the language we use and how we don't share understandings. And I often find when I talk about it, referencing you, and when we talk about it a lot in Change School, you can see people at first, their first reaction is, oh, does this really matter? This is trivial. Oh, so what? And it's like people almost take for granted that they take for granted the meaning of a word. And so you go, No. I want you to think about this a little bit. And what was really cool about the column, with the post, was that you highlighted in that session you did with those superintendents, which you referred to, in a really meaningful way. And you had something really tangible there to say to people who read it. Hey, have a think about these words. You know, what do they mean to you? What do they mean to your peers? What do they mean to the people in your community, and how often are you misinterpreting what they all mean, and collectively, therefore, what impact does that have on the work you're doing?
Well, it was a kind of a courageous moment, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe my most courageous moment of the year.
That bit I got. And the deadly silence must have killed you.
To put that up on the screen, because, I mean, these were people who had invested some time in putting that together. And I didn't, and I said this to them too, obviously, I'm in no way disparaging that work or their intentions, just trying to point out that unless we look at the language that we use, unless we are intentional about the words and that we're clear and articulate, have some coherence around what the words are, they can mean anything. And I think that it was just an interesting example that I think most of the people in the room, you know, like I said, it gave them a lot of pause, and not just because of those belief statements, but just then thinking about all of the words that we use and the ways in which we are really ambiguous in a lot of cases, just assuming that people understand what that stuff means. You know, I'm going to talk about one of my favorite words. One of our categories for the wrap up is the word of the year. And you know what the word is going to be, but I'm not going to give it up right now. But even today on Twitter, just pushing a couple people about the definition of that word. Well, you know, how can you have a conversation about learning or about a lot of these educational terms, buzzwords?
Yep.
If we don't just kind of define our terms at the beginning.
But do you think people sometimes actually quite comfortable with the ambiguity, that sometimes it lets them off the leash a bit, that sometimes they think, oh, well, you think I mean this, but in fact, I actually mean this. And sometimes I think people even play or riff off it, because it sort of gives them license to pretty much do what they like. And it avoids them actually, you know, heading in the direction that someone might be intending for them. I worry that that's the case. I think that we've become so used to misusing, trivializing, marginalizing, misappropriating language that I actually think it's become a habit for us. And it really worries me.
I don't think this is an education-specific phenomenon either.
No, good point.
I think people get a little resistant when you try to pin them down, because the ambiguity gives them license to kind of, you know, change their opinion, change their practice, do a little bit, think a little bit differently. And I do think in speaking for education and for educators, so many of these words are just, we just use them all the time. And we don't even think about them. I think about this all the time, you know, well, you need to get an education. So
I'm just going down to the big store down the road and I'm going to buy some.
But yeah, you know, I mean, right. We say it like you need to go get some milk, you know, it's like you need to get an education. Okay. So what does that mean? And especially today, what does that mean? I mean, 50 years ago, I think everybody, if they didn't talk about the definition, I think everybody probably had a fairly similar understanding of what that word means.
Yeah.
Today, I can't imagine that you put, you know, 10 people in a room, you don't get 10 different answers to that.
Yeah.
Because the ways in which we can accrue an education and, you know, the idea that you get it. Mm. But again, the language is so fascinating to me, you know, or we're going to deliver an education to you or whatever else. It just belies the complexity of that particular word and the ambiguity in it today. And I think it's more ambiguous today than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And I think it's more, you know, it's going to continue to be ambiguous until we really begin to talk about the larger context, the larger shifts that are going on, and what it is that we really think kids need to be able to do and need to know for this particular moment rather than, you know, the one, like I said, you know, a couple decades ago.
Well, probably in more recent times, and it's really a phrase, but it's got hyphens between us, but it was one that I developed way back in the 90s, which I've seen completely trivialized, and in fact, I would have to say trashed, is one-to-one.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, there's a word that, you know, it was in a specific area, okay, that people took to meaning a child and a computer, full stop. which was never, ever the intent behind it. And I probably, it really came home to me when I was doing some work over here, over in the States in a Midwest area, and someone said, yeah, we've got one-to-one deaf school. I said, really? I didn't think that was the case. Oh, no, we take the kids into a computer lab, desktops, and they all sit, each child sits at one computer. I went, okay.
Brilliant.
All right, got that one. So, you know, that was it. That's because one-to-one is such a fairly concrete idea that, you know, even something which I thought couldn't be marginalised was and has been and has been so grossly misinterpreted, it's been a source of frustration. So, you know, hence we didn't call the foundation we established back at the turn of the century the One-to-One Foundation. We called it the Anytime, Anywhere Learning Foundation, with the hand-on-heart belief that hopefully people would somehow not necessarily misinterpret what we were intending. But it's sad, really, when it happens like that.
But, you know, let's not minimize the difficulty of this, too, because at the end of that post, I actually put in another picture of this learner's bill of rights that the superintendents had constructed. And I thought it was
a really good piece of work.
Pretty strange. Really I thought good. So, too. But then, you know, I got on Twitter and I got a couple of pieces of blowback on that, you know, saying, you know, the second one kind of contradicts the first one. And so, and I get it. I'm not saying that that type of response or that type of feedback isn't important. But I'm just using it to make the point that it's difficult, this whole idea of becoming coherent around the words that we use is not an easy task. You know, I'm reminded of Chris Layman and working with him when he started Science Leadership Academy, gosh, 12 years ago now, something like that. And just taking so much time to clarify the words, you know, to make sure that this is who we are and this is what these words mean in the context of who we are. We're not just pulling words out of the air because other people are using them or because they sound good.
Yep.
These are the words that absolutely reflect what we believe, what we're about, you know, who we are, and just, you know, how much time it takes to make sure that everyone understands those meanings and how important that is, though, for creating a culture and, you know, a lot of things that we talk about, creating a culture, creating learning environments, and just, yeah, moving along that continuum so that you really do fulfill your mission and your vision.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. I was going to say that surely there's no more important role for language is in the crafting of a mission and vision. And it's interesting you raise SLA because I often quote, you know, the words they've used, which one are very simple. There's no complexity in the way they express their beliefs about what they're doing there. And I think therefore people fully understand what's expected of them. I mean, ultimately, you know, if you can misinterpret language within a mission and a vision to a point that basically anyone can do anything, which is what we know so many, both companies, corporations and schools do, and I think they do deliberately, then there's really no point of having that thing sticking on the wall because it becomes, you know, everything to everybody. And it does take some time. So when you come back to your group of superintendents who are sitting in a room in a few hours crafted what they did in those three bullet points, I think it was exceptional work. I think it was really clear. Sure, they might massage a couple of the words a little bit more, but I actually can't even see the point of people going through a, you know, mission and vision workshop and coming out with language which is so obtuse, so vague, so deliberately, as we were saying before, ambiguous. It's sort of like, oh, well, let's just say something that won't threaten or undermine anyone or challenge anyone. Let's say something that makes everyone feel good, and then we'll all be happy little campers inside the school or inside the company. It's such a waste of time.
But my sense of it is when people do create those statements, that's not what they're thinking consciously. No. I don't think that they set out.
No, I agree with that. I was being a little bit cynical there.
No, I know. But I think it's worth just pointing out that I do believe most people have good intent.
Yeah.
But it's just the, you know, the without, you know, getting too critical or sounding too critical, but it's the education word salad, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. Sure.
It's like we take a whole bunch of words that everybody's kind of using and that we think, you know, reflect the ethos of the day or whatever else. We're just going to throw them into, you know, this kind of pile, and then we'll pull them out and make some sense out of them. And everybody will go, "Ooh, that sounds great. Yeah, that's great."
Yep.
And then they walk away from it and they never think about it again, or they don't, you know, they don't really live it. You know, we talk about that a lot too. They're not living those words. They don't really aspire to those words at the end of the day. It's kind of just, they kind of check the box. I mean, even today I had a couple conversations. I'm heading out after the first of the year to do some work with schools. And I had a couple conversations with principals and superintendents today, just in preparation for that. And, you know, I kept kind of trying to drill down. You know, I hear words like, "Well, we've been pretty successful in that." And, you know, "Well, you know, our kids are cheap." And I'm like, "Well, so what does success mean to you? I mean, what is that? Define that for me, so I know what that means when you say it." And people struggle with it. And that's what I find really interesting. You know, I mean, when kind of pushed a little bit to get really clear on even things like success, achievement, you know, not just learning and education, which are our favorites, right? It's just a struggle because people don't think about it. They just don't really think about it until they just, you know, start using those words and putting them out there. So
it probably gives a segue then to move to talk about specifically, you know, a few things reflecting back on the past 12 months, you know.
Well, let me just jump in, and just one other thing about that post though, that I think maybe let's just talk about for a couple minutes. So, you know, what do you do if you are listening to this?
Or that's a good point.
You know, what do you do to kind of pull those words into a place where they're more clearly defined and everybody at least knows what those definitions are, even if they don't necessarily agree with them or you know, aren't living them? I mean, what would you suggest? I mean, in terms of
it's
kind of all over the place and help them focus it.
Well, I think it's firstly about the words they're using in what it is they're trying to do. But I think you go back to Saracen, you know, in the name of the book, what do you mean by learning? If you start with a word like learning, if in examining that single word, which we spend so much time talking about, and you throw that into the mix at the outset, I think it firstly with people it highlights just how this can happen and how complex it can get when people misinterpret meaning for the words they're using. And it maybe helps them force to be a little bit more thoughtful, a little bit more intentional about the way they're crafting words in whatever they're doing. Because if we can't come to some agreement about what we mean by learning, what is the point of any of the other conversation? And so I think that's always, and we often say, that has to be the starting point. And we don't talk about it. We hardly talk about it at all, let alone talk about it enough.
And, you know, I'm not saying that there are 20 or 50 words that we have to just kind of, you know, slog our way through. But I think there are four or five that we should really be clear on. I think learning is one. I think
learning is one.
Is another. Success, achievement.
That's the four. They're probably the four hotties, I think. I mean, they're the four that probably help, you know, get us into a bit of bother from time to time. And, you know, if we think it's bad enough across our peers, across the learning professionals, across our school community, when it hits the world, you know, the greater media in the world, I mean, that's where we really get into trouble. So if we can't have an agreed belief about what these words mean, then we're in real trouble.
And the other thing, you know, I would also, if I really want to, you know, almost make myself uncomfortable too, but I think teacher is another word that, you know, we have to start thinking about, and school. So I was reading something today and I was thinking about the idea or the fact, I guess, that, you know, the value of school, the value of a teacher, the value of a classroom, I believe they're changing, they're changing quickly. And so even those conversations, why do we exist? You know, I posted something to our Slack group yesterday that I was reading by Peter Block, and it was this very interesting quote where he said something along the lines of, you know, when we start asking how, we assume there's an answer there and that all we have to do is find it and apply it, you know. But the bigger question is, why are we really in existence? What's the purpose that we serve for kids? Why do we need teachers now? And I, you and I both, you know, we agree, I know that we need schools and teachers. We want schools and teachers, but those roles are definitely changing in those definitions.
And then you start touching on real sensitivities, because people do think you're trying to subvert their role, Absolutely. Particularly their power relationship and their authority. And it becomes, that's where people get very sensitive and start, you know, responding. And I was interested you raised the word teacher, because, as you know, I was out with Peter Hutton at Templestowe College a couple of weeks ago. Yep. And that's another podcast that we'll be sharing in the new year. And it's just, it's just good.
34, 35, I don't know what number that is. But yeah
that's right. It's an interesting school, and he's taken a lot of risks, and they're doing some extremely good work out there. It's been very controversial. There's no question about it. But they have a number of policies that they put in place, that, and one of them is they limit. They don't say don't use the word teacher, because that's where people get really antsy. Mm. But they say, they talk about staff and students. So they talk about the adults in the room and the younger people in the room. And so the one person policy is respect. It's built around respect. So what they're trying to do because there's a traditional authority or power structure associated with the word teacher, they tried to minimize that and suggest that it's about adults and young people working together as learners collectively, being treated equally at all times and at any time. Any member of the community can call someone out who is not showing that respect. Now, that is very challenging for a lot of people. I would have to say, and I think I mentioned this to you as soon as I came back from there, that without knowing that at the time, the one thing that struck me about the school was the respect that I saw across all members of the community. And I thought, that's pretty interesting. Is it just because, you know, they're using different language? There's a whole lot of things at play there, and it's taken a lot of time. So don't misinterpret this as being a simple thing of I won't use the word teacher as often. We're not trying to say that at all. And there's nothing wrong in using the word. It's not trying to minimize or trivialize the role, but it is saying there are changes. And for many people, as I said, the power authority structure associated with it is in conflict with the culture of the school. And that's why they don't do it in the school.
I think, you know, to probably really mash up a metaphor here, but, you know, when you're building a school, you can build the onion from the inside out.
Yep.
When you have an existing school, you really have to peel those layers back until you get to the core.
Yep.
Kind of reevaluate what the core is and then start, you know, putting those layers back together. And I think that's the difficulty with schools that exist. We say this all the time. If you really want to make change in schools, go start one, because it's just easier. Sure. Than it is to take an existing school that's been around for a long time and move forward.
And just a quick reminder that this episode of the Modern Learners Podcast is being brought to you by Change School, where educational leaders get 8 weeks of intense immersion into the process of changing their schools and lifetime membership in a global community of change leaders seeking high bar, relevant, sustainable reimagination of their schools for the students they serve. Enrollment's now open for our fourth cohort, which starts in January, so head on over to change.school for all the details. And now, let's get back to our conversation.
Well, look, an interesting conversation around that, and something that I know has been one that we've talked about a lot in 2017, but let's get to what you were getting to there a little earlier and start reflecting a little bit. So had just a couple categories. Who knows, next year when we're on podcast like number 82 or whatever it is, then we'll have a whole ceremony for this or something. But
a brass band.
We decided word of the year, book of the year, kind of edu trend of the year. And I don't know, I had the word kind of silly in front of that, but I don't know if we're going to use that. And then just talking about a little bit about what we think for 2018. Yeah. So I'll let you start. Word of the year, Bruce, what is it?
Yeah, for me, it was an easy one. And by the way, before I say this, in terms of word of the year for us in the work that we've been doing, which I think other people might have found amusing at times, it has to be the word intentional.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
It's within the work that we've been doing. That's and Missy's taught us that.
That's right.
That we do have to be more intentional. But the word of the year for me has to be transformation.
Yes.
Because
golf
I would
golf clap.
Thank you. Good golf clap. Thank you. I think now we have certainly, it's moved into the stratosphere of ambiguity. I think that I have now seen transformation being applied in so many improbable and unsuitable areas that I think it's sad, by the way, because I also, you know, someone who's used the word for many years. I think the very first book I ever published was a collection of work that other people had done. I think we called it Transforming Learning. You know, wow, how about that? That was about 1998 or something. So I don't think that it's almost to a point where it's been trivialized beyond recognition. And I don't want to call out specific transformational projects because I think that might be a good idea. But I do think it is one of those really warm, you know, warms your heart type words that if someone, I'm transforming my school, I'm transforming my system, I'm in a transformation project. So it has so many different meanings to so many people. And I, to be really fair, it leads from that sort of conversation that I was incredibly fortunate to have quite a number of years ago with Seymour Papert, when he talked about the difference that he said, it's a pity that we don't talk so much about the difference between incremental improvement and fundamental change or transformation. He said, the problem isn't that one is right or wrong. The problem is that we don't talk about the difference. And you and I spend so much time talking about the impact and nature of incrementalism and opposed to fundamental shifts and transformation. And it comes back to just not defining what people mean by this. And even incrementalism, you know, in itself is also a word that you can play around with. And, you know, there's people like even Martin Luther King, you know, use the word radical incrementalism. I think that it just highlights as a word of the year for me, just how we can abuse and misuse language to suit our own purposes. So it was a pretty easy one for me. What about you, Will? What's your word?
Well, I was going to say transformation might be the word of the last two decades.
Yeah, you're probably right. Not just 2015. Yeah, I think.
Well, you know, come on. Let me guess.
Does it start with?
This is amazing for me too. Because, yeah. You know, it makes me start quivering every time I hear it. But has to be.
Which personal. Is a lot.
Has Which to is be a lot. Personalization, yes, and ongoing and continual attempt to get people to say personal, if that's what they mean. Personalization is, I think, without question, the word that has been co-opted more than any other in the education space.
Absolutely.
By people who want to make money and by people who are trying to, just come up with all sorts of software programs and whatever else to give kids different paths to the same outcomes. And
yep.
I was reminded of that today. If you go to my Twitter stream today, I posted a Twitter thread by Ben Harold from EduWeek or one of those education magazines.
Yep.
At the moment. But he was talking about Mark Zuckerberg, who yesterday came out and said he wants basically to personalize every classroom, every student.
Fantastic. Wow. Yeah, marvelous.
And, you know, there are good souls, good, well-meaning educators who, when they say personalize, are really saying personal, but the word has been lost on them. And so, you know, the difference to me is, again, just to make it really succinct, personalized is something that's done to you. Personal is something you do for yourself. And I think there are a lot of people in education who want the latter, but who are using the former in terms of the language. And I'm still on this crusade to make people use the word personal learning when they're talking about agency and choice and passion and really giving kids the opportunities to learn about the things they want to learn. And I will say, and I'm not taking any credit for this at all, but I will say, and you and Missy and I were talking about this the other day, it seems like that there are some people now who are moving away from personalized and moving
Thank goodness.
More. And I think that that's a really, really great shift, as long as, again, we're clear on what personal means. But anyway, I just think that's without question the word for 2017. And it is now exploding with the help of Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates and all sorts of other people who see software as the way to kind of raise the level for every child. And as we agree, that's not what it's about in this moment.
Well, the interesting thing is not only are they spending a lot of money on that in that space, but they've also burnt hundreds of millions of dollars trying to do it poorly. And that's what's amazing. You'd almost think that the amount of money they lost would have taught them a lesson or two. But in the context of modern learners, and particularly as our final podcast of the year, just to keep things in the global context, I think we should reinforce that we also quote this word with its spelling with both an S and a Z or a Z. So whether you're in North America or other countries, personalized with both spellings is the word that we're nominating.
And I was actually debating someone from the UK today about that on Twitter, and I consciously used the S instead of the Z, so just to make sure that I was being clear. So anyway, okay. So on to category number two, and this is interesting because we chose the same answer. The book of the year. So now let me just preface this by saying that in a lot of ways, this was really difficult because a lot of the books I read this year were not written this year.
Yeah, that's right. We both had that problem. They're 10 years old, 20 years old. Yeah.
And some of the books that I read were really great. I love Joy Ito's book in terms of, how the world is changing. And I think you can take, there's some debate in that. But from a learning standpoint and just a schooling standpoint, our consensus winner was These Schools Belong to You and Me by Deb Meyer and Emily Gassoy. I'm holding it up for the one person who's watching us on Facebook now. Isn't that a great cover? There you go.
Yep.
And I don't know about you. I'll let you talk about why that was yours. But I just found it just a powerful, powerful read and a powerful, compelling voice for the importance of schools, specifically the importance of public schools. I know it's totally US-centric, but I think it resonates with schools around the world in places where it is just a fabric of our society and plays a huge role in who we are and what we will become. And I'll let you kind of talk about it before I read a couple passages in here. But there were just a couple moments in this book where I was just like, how can you not love this? How can you not love what she's talking about?
I think it's rather interesting because it is interesting we both came to that same space. It's also interesting that this isn't a new author,
No.
Deb has been writing about this. Deborah Meyer's been writing about this material for so long, together with a number of other people that we've quoted over time. And I think that it's an important book, but also, can I just say, she almost gets a tie for two books in the one year that we refer to.
That's right.
Because the other book, of course, was Beyond Testing, which I think the subtitle is Assessment. The seven assessments for students and schools more effective than standardized tests. And, that was a book that she wrote with, I think it's Matthew Konoska. And that was a book that I think, again, a bit like what we were talking about with the podcast that we did yesterday with Scott. This was a book that was calling out a lot of the misunderstandings and misrepresentations that have been around assessment. But in the book that you're referring to, I mean, Deb's got such a long history in this space, and she expresses it in a very accessible way that I think people really can relate to. And in doing that, she challenges what we're thinking, where our priorities are. And that's the thing that I think
I totally agree with you that her assessment book is on the must-read list as well. But here's the line that will separate that book from this book, where she writes, "But I assert that schooling, as it exists in most traditional settings, is fundamentally the legal enforced removal of children's personal liberty for 5 to 6 hours a day, 185 days each year. Why has the enduring classroom norm been to keep lively, vital youngsters sitting still at desks for 12 to 15 years, no matter what their interests or inclinations?" And then she says, "And given how counter many schools run to the human drive to learn through experience, apprenticeship, and practice, we must ask, how realistic is it to imagine that most children would, with enthusiasm and eagerness, voluntarily enlist in the task of being schooled?" That's just brilliant. I think that when you understand, and it just goes back again to many of the things we've been talking about this year, in terms of what are we doing? Are we doing the right thing? because in many ways, I think she just clarifies it, so brilliantly. We're not doing the right thing.
It's so funny when we started, all this work. At the moment, I am not sitting in my office, obviously, because I'm sitting in a hotel room in Perth. But normally on my behind me, you talk about my green screen of library books and amongst them, when we started doing this work 5 years ago, I'm one of these people who, frustratingly for my wife, keep a lot of books. I don't keep all of them, but I keep an awful lot of them. And some of the books I went back to were the books that I was reading when I was at college and when I started teaching, and hers were some of them. I had, two or three of her books there. And here she is, at this age, doing the work that she's doing and still managing to produce this material, which is so impactful and so appropriate and in line with everything that we're talking about.
I just want to read this other piece too, and I think this is much more US-centric, but I think it's just vital. And it is one of the foundations around this, because the real thread through this book is that schools are imperative for democracy to succeed. Yeah. And they're just a fundamental part of it. So I'll just read this real fast. She goes, "But not all the choices we make are conducive to advancing a democratic vision rooted in a sense of shared citizenship. Our commitment to democracy is being tested now more than ever. We have to decide if we are willing to forego the opportunity to win the proverbial lottery that will propel us into the lucky 1%, which is the version of the American dream that our current system offers, or whether to act as if everyone's kids were our own, as if our future prospects and those of our children brightened or dimmed in proportion to the prospects of others."
That's fantastic.
It's really just an important, important read. And it is our 2017 first annual
book of the year. Can I, as you said, there was an American centric mention there. I do want to give just a mention to an unusual, but a different book from probably an area that people mightn't have thought of. And that's giving deference to our friends, as we say in Australia, across the pond in New Zealand. And it was a book by Wellbeings, INGS, called Disobedient Teaching. And I really like this book, not because of the way he told the story. It's a very, very personal book and a very personal story. And the notion of thinking of being a disobedient teacher is sort of just challenges you as an idea. You say to yourself, "Oh, I don't quite know whether I even like that phrase." But I've followed up on. I've never met Welby, but I do very much respect a lot of what I've read and seen of his. But he has a quote which I think is also very appropriate towards the end of the book that he quotes from Sylvia Ashton Warner. When she says, and this is talking about change in schools and creating change in education. And I just love this quote because it was so appropriate for the work we've been doing. "You must be true to yourself, strong enough to be true to yourself, brave enough to be strong enough to be true to yourself, wise enough to be brave enough to be strong enough to shape yourself from what you actually are." And I just love it because I think it speaks so much to the work we've been doing.
Yeah, that's excellent. All right, trend of the year. Now, like I said before, that silly or stupid might be in the parentheses before that, but I'll let you go first on this one, Bruce. What for 2017, well, do you think might be the silly edu trend of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we hopefully would have learned that playing around in artificial places isn't necessarily where I think we have enough to focus on in places that are in front of us, and it's not that I don't believe in virtual spaces. We spend an awful lot of time, thinking about what can be and what's possible. But I am frankly sick and tired of us getting distracted by emerging technologies, which sounds like a contradiction coming from me, given the work that I've done. But this whole notion of augmented reality and virtual reality is driving me nuts, not because I don't think it has application, not because I don't think it even has applications in parts of education, and I'm sure that I could sit here and name a dozen possibilities for it, but it has very little, if not nothing, to do with what we should be doing in education right now, today. So I wish we would spend more time, setting priorities and deciding where we're going to be focused, And just because, you know, all of a sudden we now know that augmented reality can be a fun game that we can walk around and play for as a fad for 3 weeks.
With very beautiful goggles on.
Beautiful look. I love it. Yes, it's the idea of the goggles. And then, you know, you can see everyone getting so excited about it. And yet I think that, you know, what was it that wasn't the good life? What was the life we used to have with virtual reality back a number of years ago? But, you know, Second Life. How could I forget that? Second Life, you would have thought, I did genuinely believe that Second Life taught us, you know, how to be a lot more thoughtful, and dare I say it, intentional, about how we assess the impact these ideas might have on what we do with kids and what we're doing in schools. And unfortunately, it hasn't. I mean, Second Life was a gigantic waste of time and money. Not again, that some people didn't do. Nice work. But it was a gigantic waste of money. So I hope that people put those sorts of emerging technologies in a place that is more suitable for consideration than they're giving it in too many places. And I hope that people are more focused on the young people in their school today rather than worrying about those sorts of technologies.
One of my best moments or memories, I don't know if it was best or one of my most clear memories of when I started speaking about 8-10 years ago is at one conference. I was cornered by an assistant superintendent, literally cornered, who was yelling at me about the fact that I would not promote Second Life in class. I mean, she was 100%.
Congratulations. Did you get a medal for that?
100% in. And I was like, you know, I'm sorry. But yeah. And she was just like, you are doing kids a disservice. And I'm like, okay. Anyway, moving on. So
what's yours?
Yeah, my silly edgy trend is close. It's artificial intelligence. You know, we go back to that post that we wrote. Wasn't it something like AI, VR, AR, and BS or something?
Acronym salad.
I think we've covered them all. But yep. I'm just going to make this really short and sweet because in our one of our favorite bloggers, one of our favorite people, Audrey Waters, today in her one of her end of the year wrap ups. Which, by the way, if you have not gone to Hack,
oh yeah.
And read Audrey's end of the year series. I don't know, first of all, how she does those. I mean, she must write, it's a book. It's gotta be 50, 60, 70,000 words, if not more. But anyway, in her one today about top ed tech trends in terms of robots are coming for your kids. this is just a paragraph about AI that killed me. And so these are all the articles that basically she's linking to. She says, robot teachers, I'm not sure there was any edtech fantasy repeated more often this year than that one. AI will be the next big thing in the classroom. Amazon's Alexa is your next teacher. Robots will revolutionize how people teach and learn. Machine learning will revolutionize how people teach. Artificial intelligence will transform how people learn. AI will choose better lessons. AI will improve graduation rates. AI will improve guidance counseling. Robots will improve student engagement. Robots will keep students on task. AI will replace testing. AI will facilitate testing. AI will be the key to personalized learning. Woo! AI will teach students how to be better writers. Robots will then grade these papers. AI will optimize K-12 education. And then she says there are all sorts of claims and predictions about the future of education. Chatbots as teaching assistants and chatbots for sex and drug education. And, you know, it's just like, it's classic, right? And look, I am not saying that AI isn't going to have an effect on the world, on jobs. On all that other
stuff.
Put
it in perspective.
It's here we go again, right? Yep. It's just like, everybody just is like, it's going to change. No, it's not. There are lots of things that we need to be focused on that are more important than the effects of AI in the classroom. And, you know, as much as you know, I'm guilty of kind of following those loose threads of the future myself, we got to stop. I have to stop too, but we have to stop in education and just stay focused, like I said, on the core of the onion, because this is just another one of those layers. It's a context. We need to understand it. We need to think about it, but it cannot drive our work right now.
Yeah.
Our work requires a whole bunch more fundamental thinking than what you find in A. But anyway, I love that. Just list from
She's amazing, isn't she? Her capacity is incredible. Yeah.
And that's just one paragraph in like, you know, 60 that she writes about robots and kids. Well, Bruce, so.
Okay. So moving ahead, looking ahead.
What do you think about next year? I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to it on a lot of levels because I just can't imagine it can be as crazy as 2017 was, but who knows, right? I mean, it may even be worse. Who knows? But what do you think? So if you had to make a prediction for next year, in terms of education and learning, what would you think is going to
happen? I think to follow on just what we were saying there, despite what we were just saying, I do think we are going to see a lot more educators and particularly educational leaders ignoring distracting emerging technologies. So even though that's what we've just referred to there, I think people now finally have come to accept where technology fits. I don't think they're too worried about, you know, what brand or technology they're using. They know what it makes possible for kids, and they're focused back on that possibility rather than being focused on the technology. But the trend that I do think that's going to come through that I think is going to be really exciting is I think we're going to see the beginnings of a lot more diverse school models. A lot more, I think, and you know, we obviously have to be optimistic given the work that we've been doing with some of the school leaders that have been in Change School in the last three cohorts, and the fact that, you know, we're more than half full for the next cohort for Change School, and it's still, you know, 3 or 4 weeks away. I mean, I think the demand now is not just because people want to come and talk to us and work with us in the program, but the community that we're building in Change School is starting to make a real difference. And I think, you know, that's something we want to be modestly excited about. We are excited that if we can help make that possible, because certainly, you know, the takeaways that both of us have had from what we've learned from the people we're working with in those community have been amazing. And we often reflect on those and reflect on them in these podcasts. But I think as a result of those, you know, diverse school models that are going to give a lot more choice to both faculty who want to work in these places, but more importantly to students, I would like to predict that we're going to see some substantial systemic change. I think there's an opportunity where, and I could call out a country that's close by here, but I won't name a country, but I can see there is some informed school leadership, policy leadership, and dare I even say it, potentially political leadership in this sphere, where we might see a country or a state or a large system embrace this trend. And I think that will be a groundbreaking move if we do see that, Nadine. I'm obviously optimistic for it, but I do believe that's a trend we're going to see.
Yeah, I'm going to echo much of what you said. I'm not sure if 2018 is going to be a tipping point.
No,
I do think that this kind of movement that is building around doing the right thing, I don't know how else to phrase that, but I think finally there are more and more people who are just looking at the world and looking at what we do and kind of going, yeah, those things aren't working. So I think that 2018 is just going to be a year of continued growth of this larger conversation that is a meaningful, that is talking about real change at a high level. And, you know, I know that
sustainable change.
Sustainable, relevant change, which is how we talk about it all the time. And I'm not saying that we're in any way responsible for that, or, you know, I think maybe a small little piece of it. That's obviously what we're trying to do. But I just think that it's common sense. And I think the world is getting so different and so chaotic that people are just kind of looking at that gap and going, we cannot keep doing what we've been doing. And so I'm optimistic and hopeful that in this year, despite all of the continued chaos that's going to happen, and we know that's going to be the case, but that there are going to be more and more people who feel like they have permission to do change at to do change in the context of different, not better. Because they see a lot of other people now who are talking about it differently, who are acting differently, who are and I have to say, I'm just totally inspired by that conversation last night with Scott Lewis. It's just something that when you listen to that, you go, damn right. And who's going to argue with that? And all we got to do, you know, is keep pushing that boulder in whatever small ways we can. I think there are going to be a lot more people at the end of 2018 behind it than there are right now. And, you know, if you nailed me down and asked me to predict when a tipping point might happen, I think we're 5 years away from it. I really do. Mm-hmm. It's going to take time. We know that. But yep. I think we're 5 years out from a majorly, majorly different conversation around what schools are. So here's to it, right?
Yeah. So well, it's a great way to end the year. It's on such an optimistic note. And I think there's every reason to believe we should be optimistic. Yep. It's been a lot of fun. I mean, I think as much as we've done a lot of learning and we've done a lot of work, it's also been a lot of fun. Working with some phenomenal people, and that's what I think has inspired me and encouraged me to have those beliefs, and that's why I'm looking forward to 18, mate.
I agree. And so for those of you who are still with us on this podcast, we wish you happy holidays and a great new
year. All
the best. We'll be back after the first with whatever number podcast that is. Thanks so much for listening. Really, really appreciate it. And Bruce, I will talk to you again tomorrow night, but then after that...
Yeah, that's it. I'm not waking up and thinking of you.
You can wake up without thinking about me.
Cheers, happy holidays, everyone.
Yeah, cheers.